Welcome to the Athlete's Compass Podcast, your North Star for mastering endurance training and holistic health. Join us each week as renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica.ai, Paul Larson, along with athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski, guide you through the maze of often confusing training principles. Make sure your compass is ready. Class is now in session. Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. This week, we're talking about aging athletes, a subject I know well as I've crossed over the 60-year-old threshold. So first of all, from the research and my experience and observations, we'll say that endurance athletes over 40-ish start to notice a difference in their abilities and recovery. I've been reading Alan Cousins' book, Science of Maximum Athletic Development, and he says at 50, we need about 2 hours a day of exercise just to maintain our VO2 max, and at 60, we need 2.1 hours a day. That's crazy. What's going on here? What changes happen in the body's physiology with age, specifically athletic performance?
Cindy, we all love Cindy. She's always asking such great questions.
We love Cindy.
Is age just a number? At what point can an athlete start to see a decline in speed and power? Or is it relative to their athletic journey? Is it all downhill after 50? Asking for a friend.
Well, see, I've got insight into Cindy's performance, and I see, you know, it's cool she's asking that because her performances are still going up, which is pretty freaking cool. So it's amazing to see. It's been fun watching Cindy's journey. And even here in the winter time in Revelstoke, I'm still, you know, checking in on her swim time. She's getting faster in the pool, and her run paces are still really, really strong. She's a beast on the bike. So it's fun. But now, all that being said, time keeps on ticking, right? Into the future. So, Floyd was right. But we've spoken about this before on the podcast. We've got both of our chronological age, which is just the number, and when we've got our biological age. And I think we all know this, right? We all know people that wind up looking younger than and performing younger than they actually chronologically are, right? And vice versa. So there are these two things. Things are going to happen from a physiological sort of standpoint. And as much as we would love them not to, they do happen. And I've found maybe three key physiological. They're big words, but it's like this is kind of the thing that's happening. So the first one kind of that comes to mind in terms of your aging and things that are going to be turning things off is this whole process called glycation and advanced glycation end products. So glycation is when your sugar glucose starts attaching to some of your proteins and fats that are made up of the cells, right? We're made up of mostly of fatty acids and proteins that are all around the body. And then sugar comes across those. And when the sugar substances hit those, it forms something called glycation. And it basically, all of a sudden, a classic way to look at this might be like your skin is not as bouncy or supple as it used to be. And I noticed this. It's wintertime here in Revelstoke, and often I'll wear my helmet and my goggles. And then when I take those off at the end of a ski day, it's like it's still kind of attached there to my face. Like I've got like the indents, and it's I've got a 53-year-old body, and that's like there's obviously some glycation that's happened in there. The other classic example is I'm in the pool, right? And like my goggle marks in the pool are just like they're not bouncing back like they used to. And that's just kind of one of the sort of the first things, right? And now that's an example in the skin, but that's happening everywhere along all of the different parts of the body, all of your tissues. So I was watching Breakpoint the other day, which was awesome. And I forget the name of the tennis player, the Dane. But oh my God, this guy was kind of like, you know, I've got Danish blood, but it brought me back to how I looked and responded when I was 20. And this, because this kid's like about 22, right? And just like ripped muscles and bouncing all over the place and just so dynamic. And we all want that, you know, the holy grail of youth and stuff, but it slowly sort of goes. So that's one of them. That's the first one. The other ones, many of us have heard of free radicals. This is like, it's called reactive oxygen species. And it's basically, it's an electron leakage at the cellular level. And ultimately this creates like damage to your cells, to the mitochondria, and the mitochondria stop functioning as they used to. Remember, the mitochondria, the powerhouses of the cell, they're producing the energy. So these stop working as well as they used to. Another one is the telomeres. Like many of us have heard of telomeres, and these are like your chromosomes, and these get smaller and smaller. And these are again, when they become super smaller, they ultimately create cell death, and they contribute to aging at the cellular level. So, you know, those are the main ones. There's hormonal changes, there's inflammation, and on it kind of goes. But ultimately, like Paul kind of led off with what Alan Cousin was leading off with, is there is this slow deterioration over time. Now we can go and get into some ways of preventing these and slowing these down, but that's the reality of it.
So we have physiological responses. Any other kind of changes that happen, and how do these changes affect athletic performance?
Well, I mean, they're going to affect everything. Like if it's affecting energy and mitochondria, and if you got that glycation process happening, right? Like it affects everything across the board. So your efficiency is going to be less, your energy production is going to be less. And, you're just like, for any sort of given effort, you're not going to be able to move or adapt to moving at the same rate that you used to when you were younger. So that's just, and we see that across the board, right? Like if you look at studies that have assessed the change in VO2 max or physiological performance with age, you just see this progressive reduction across the lifespan. Of course, that's changed and that's lessened with exercise training, right? So if you're, like Alan Cousins was kind of saying, if you keep your training up there, you're doing one of the key things to tell the cells not to do all of that. So not to, you know, don't turn off, please. Don't go into senescence and switch off for me. I've got to keep going, right? And it keeps everything up there. Like even from the glycation standpoint, right? Like the more you're exercising, the lower your blood glucose level, or more stable your blood glucose level is going to be. And again, there's less of those advanced glycation end products, and less of that, the skin turning the way I was describing it, right? Like, but right across the whole body. And you can maintain more of your youth into your later ages. So this is why you want to keep these things up there. And, you know, we can go into, the effect that strength training has on that, high intensity level training, fasting, even cold water immersion. All these things have various different effects on that whole aging process if done consistently across the lifetime.
I was just thinking when you said the goggle marks, my kids always, they can tell when I've been swimming because I have massive goggle marks, and like look at me when they come from school. Hey, mom, did you swim today? But then I was thinking my 13-year-old boy, he has put on some massive weight, like muscle weight, like the past 8 months, like he went from a stick to an like athlete. Like he is so strong. He's been working out. So that got me thinking hormonal changes as we age, like women start producing less estrogen and men lose their testosterone, which my son is just like,
yeah,
he's pumping it out. And you can see the bicep just growing every week.
Yeah.
It's impressive. So women after 30, you guys are a little bit luckier that you can keep your muscle mass a bit longer. But yeah, strength training becomes so important for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get into strength training, you just bring up a really good point. You know, Grant Koisman, one of my athletes, asks, and he's being somewhat facetious, but he brings up a good point. How long do I have before my kids start outrunning me? You know, but the point is, at what age do people generally start noticing a difference in their athletic ability? And is that predetermined? Is that going to happen regardless? Can we do anything to maintain those abilities? Can you still outrun your kids, Mariana?
It depends what distance. I have 13-year-old, 12-year-old, and 9-year-old. I think I can still out-sprint my 9-year-old. My 12-year-old daughter is a sprinter, so that's a tough ask. And my 13-year-old, no, I can't out-sprint. But 5K, I'll take them all.
Awesome.
Yeah. But I think it totally depends. Like my dad, I used to run with him, but he was a heavy smoker. So around 10, I was a really good runner when I was 10. But he stopped running with me because, you know, heavy smoker, he couldn't keep up with me anymore. But it totally depends on the context, right? Like, what are you used to do? My grandmother used to bicycle 2 hours or 60K. So that would be like 2-3 hours, 60K every day. She's 96 this year, still kicking.
Yeah.
So I also think like it depends, like, what are you doing? What are you doing in your life? Like if you are just watching, you know, baseball sitting and not moving, of course your kids are going to outrun you quite quickly.
Absolutely. I would just agree. And I was reflecting on the question as well. I was in the pool this morning with my daughter. She's got some club beside me. And I just happened to be in the lane beside her. And she's going by me, which is so cool. I just love it. She's 13 and now she's out swimming dad, which is great.
Awesome.
And, it's kind of that, you know, so dad's 53 and she's 13 and she's going stronger and dad's going less, and this is life. So
we mentioned strength training. Let's get into that a little bit. Like, what are some of the key adjustments that aging endurance athletes need to make in their training routines to accommodate these changes?
Yeah. So I really am a big believer in strength training, Paul, especially the importance as when we age, and Mariana highlighted that as well, really the importance in female athletes as well, females in general. Like, you want to, it's a bit of a race, right? It's a race against time. And you are like from the age of, call it, you know, 25, 30, it's kind of like there's this, you're sort of at your peak around then. You know, and it's gray where that is, right? Like, so let's look at Dan Plews, who set the world record for the Ironman for age group in California, breaking 8 hours. He's 40, right? So it just kind of shows that, you know, that is kind of like the right around the top. Dave Scott is another classic one. I think he was 42 and he was second in Kona. So these are examples of masters athletes that are performing exceptionally right at the top of the world. But it's anywhere in that 25 to 45 kind of area that things are going to start to be drifting downwards in terms of all those various different physiological happenings are going to be starting to go on. And I think Dan's actually, he's went and he said quite, he's been quite vocal on his socials about this is kind of where he's moving now. As he's done with Ironman, he's retired from Ironman. He's really focusing on his own strength training, which I think is kind of really cool in that he recognizes that that's pretty important now for his own longevity, because it's like function, right? Like we know now that the problem, one of the key problems that then becomes is your fast twitched larger muscles start to become quiet because we don't use them anymore. So we want to make sure that we're still using them and that we're engaging those large fast twitch ones. To do that, you've got to lift heavy. Like you've got to work towards lifting heavy. You got to really be cautious with that, right? Like if you don't have any experience with that, you don't want to do that all of a sudden, right? You can have a back injury or whatever. But if you can work towards doing, you know, lifting heavy things, then that by definition, you have to kind of go and recruit your large fast twitch muscle fibers. So, you know, you might see in the background, I've got the weights loaded up right there. I'm trying my darndest to recruit those big fast twitch muscle fibers every second day or so. And yeah, because I know it's a race against time. I'm 53 now, so it's like I want to keep those things turned on. And there's other hormonal effects as well, right? Like for me, for guys, is testosterone, the bone and muscle mass up, and then for women, it's estrogen.
And I think like lifting heavy is also a little bit relative. Like what is heavy to you might be totally different for somebody else.
Totally.
So when you're looking at strength training, yes, you need to have some kind of a base of strength training and learning the lifting techniques. But also I find like, if you think about what is the risk of injury for older athletes, it's often, or older people, it's often falls. So, and because we forget to play when we get older, we don't challenge our balance, which is one key of preventing falls. So we forget to challenge our balance, and then we go out and reach something and then we lose our balance and get hurt, right? So for me as a personal trainer, I always like if I'm working with the older athlete, balance is one key aspect that we work on. The other one is reaction speed or the quickness. So we do some, not necessarily like jumps in the beginning, but moving your feet quicker, being able to like balance again, like if we lose a step or whatever. So that should be just like a core program for strength, should be learning to lift the technique. And you won't be lifting heavy in the beginning. So you have to gradually build balance and some kind of reaction speed or quickness. Like it could be just hopping on one foot and then just progressing it that way.
Yep, absolutely. And if I could just kind of extend on that, Mariana. So these are, you're spot on. That balance and reaction is so key. And I'm not sure if you mentioned play as well, but anytime you can actually play to allow this to occur, you don't even know it's sort of happening. But like, so here we're in wintertime, downhill skiing is just fantastic for all of those things, from balance to heavy strength, depending on the context, to reaction all the time, right? So this is something that's how I'm trying to get that. But it could be playing basketball if you had that as an experience. It could be playing volleyball if that's an experience. It could be playing catch. You know, it's just like all these various different means. Anytime you can get the balance reaction in your life, alongside of some heavy work, then it's you're hitting that nail of importance to hold on to those capacities that you want to hold on to. That's going to prevent those falls, because falls eventually, when we, you know, we get to our elder years, that's one of the key things. You're right, Mariana, that's going to get us.
Yeah, and I remember when my kids were smaller, and took them to a playground. I tried to play too. Like I went in there and balanced and, you know, like really awkward trying to fit my big body through some narrow tubes. And but I did it because one, it's fun, and two, it's good for me to challenge myself. So if you're in all the years where you have grandkids, don't just sit there, just get in there. Try to balance, stand on one foot, try to walk on the, you know, those beams like kids do. It's hard work.
Couldn't agree more.
So are there nutritional, I know we're going to be doing some podcasts on nutrition by itself. Are there specific suggestions for aging athletes, dietary adjustments, supplements, things that we as older athletes should be doing differently?
Yeah. So we mentioned the advanced glycation end products, and I know it's a big long word, but the middle word in there is glycation, advanced glycation end products. So that's sugar, right? When sugar attaches to your proteins and fats that are in, that you're made up of, that creates the less buoyant, bouncy skin, right? And same around the body. So it's the same sort of thing with how can I keep my blood glucose level a little bit lower so that it's kind of more stable and less kind of, you know, with the diabetic kind of challenges. And the answer there is probably, well, there's lots of ways to skin that, but and it's probably very individual. But fasting is a known strategy, and there's, you know, hundreds of studies that have shown the benefits of this for both the advanced glycation end products, but also something that, you know, we haven't really mentioned anything about the brain and the mind. We want to maintain our brain and mind function right to the end as well. And there's something called brain-derived neurotrophic factors is one of the big enzymes that they measure, and they find that this, you know, the same thing that I mentioned before. So both fasting, high intensity interval training, and cold water immersion we've spoken about before, all those three are the big rocks in terms of strategies that cause more brain-derived neurotrophic factor to enhance, and for this to allow better connectivity across the neurons of the brain. So I guess fasting is kind of one aspect of nutrition. So meal timing ultimately. So how could you go about fasting? Well, lots of different ways, but you could have your last meal for a while be your dinner, and then you could potentially, you know, as soon as you wake up, you might have your workout in the morning with, you know, you just start with a bit of water and then get out the door and just have your, you know, your first workout of the day. Maybe it's 30 minutes, and maybe you could just kind of do that fasted, whatever it is, and then have your first meal of the day sometime after that. Well, that's, you know, that's 14 hours probably that you've already sort of gone through this period of low glycemia, kind of assist with that reduced aging process. So that's one example. And then, of course, we could talk about lower carbohydrate strategies. But even if you just wanted, like, you know, we'll talk about this in the next one, the next podcast. But nutrition, when we're discussing nutrition, can be a real minefield, and with differences of opinion. If you want to look at the process of having too big of a spike in your glucose levels, your sugar levels, is one of the reasons for why this is a potential problem. Any means of kind of keeping that lower is better. And so you can even have more complex carbohydrates on board that are slow carbohydrates. In other words, they're less spiky. They're less like a sugar product. And they're just more like, they're just slowly kind of bleeding out, right? So like an apple, you might respond very just fine to an apple because there's lots of fiber that's in it, and it just slowly kind of releases its glucose in the form of both fructose and glucose that's in it. But overall, you're not getting this big spike. You're just kind of getting like a level sort of amount. So that's one strategy and one idea. But you know, we can go on. What are your thoughts on nutrition, Mariana, for helping with the aging process? You've got some interesting experiences on this one, I know.
Well, I think protein is also one thing. Like, I'm thinking like strength training. Like, you want to make sure that you get enough protein as you age when you're going through maybe a less, you know, muscle mass building. So you want to make sure that when you're doing your strength training that you get that protein in as well.
Oh, couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you're right. I mean, honestly, I probably should have emphasized that more as well, because you generally get a fairly low glycemic response when you have good sources of protein, right? Like, so if you're, you know, think of hard-boiled eggs or however you want to have your eggs, right? Like, it's, you know, you're not going to get a big spike in glucose from an egg. So at least you shouldn't be. So because, you know, it's just amino acids ultimately and essential fatty acids that you're getting. And you do get glucose from that. Don't forget, your liver undergoes a process called gluconeogenesis, and it will still provide glucose to the body, and just in the amount it needs. But it's like all the amino acids are there as well to build the structures that you want to maintain, like your muscles and bones. So, yep.
I want to bring the female athlete aspect into this as well.
Sure.
Like, we start losing muscle mass a little bit earlier than men. I can't highlight enough how important strength training becomes early on. Like, even like my 12-year-old daughter sees strength training, and I'm so happy that she enjoys it, because it's so important for women. And I was lucky. I quit cross country skiing when I was 20, and then I really loved lifting heavy. And then when I was, I can't remember quite, like 25, 28, I spent a lot of time at the gym lifting heavy because I wanted to ski well, like alpine ski. So my peak muscle mass was probably at the highest 28, 30, but it has served me really well because I don't see the decline in my strength yet as a 46, almost 46 year old.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think, like, I don't see that I am getting much slower yet, but I assume it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, again, the story goes that, you know, there is this fall in estrogen levels as we age, or as women ages, and especially at menopause too, right? There's a vast fall at that point, whenever that happens. So the story goes that, you know, there's a real race to put on muscle mass prior to that, because it is going to serve you very well. So both bone mass and muscle mass, and they will go hand in hand too, right? Because the more muscle mass you have, the likely the more force that you're putting on those bones, they're going to be stronger. And again, they're going to be topped up and holding you into your older years. So yeah. Women, if you can get on the Mariana program and start lifting earlier, it's super, super important to do. It's why we've got strength training sessions in the athletic program.
Let's talk about mental health as we age, and how do we tackle getting older and perhaps not performing as well as we were when we were younger?
That's my problem.
What do you tell yourself?
What do I tell myself? Yeah, well, it's just the old adage: be kind to yourself, right? Like, you do need to, and we're all our hardest critics, and you just kind of have to be accepting of it. There's nothing like, what's really the alternative, right? Like, it's the alternative isn't pretty, so it's like you got to just keep smiling and meditate on it. And you know, if your 13-year-old daughter goes by you in the pool, then you just gotta smile and be happy with that. Or whoever it is going by you in the pool or on the bike or out in the trails running, whatever. It's like, yeah, this is just life. And, there's a beauty in that as well. Right. So just smile at it and be at one with it. And yeah, it's like you can only, there's nothing else you can do but zen on it.
There's also that element of, I know this is in the hit sciences in Athletica about training smarter and not harder. And I think that the older we get, there's an element of, I'm not crushing myself because I know that I don't need to. I've learned a lot. I know that I have, you know, 8 billion miles racked up in my legs right now, and I don't need to do as much training as I used to because I've, you know, I'm smarter about it now. I pick and choose my battles, and there is that acceptance. One of the things that I really appreciate is being able to race against other age groupers, you know, trying not to compare myself to the 20 somethings, but to race against, you know, guys and women who are guys my age and in my age category. And that kind of feels like at the level, the playing field is a little more level.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. This is the beauty of the age group competition that we have, right? Is that you can see how you're tracking relative to others that are around that age. So that is kind of fun to see. And yeah. That you know, that's, it's healthy to have that competitive streak. But at the same time, there is this, like sometimes you get into context, like, so my, you know, in my context, yeah, I probably could only race in cycling because my running days, I've basically blown a tire in my right hip, and it's just, I can't run marathons and Ironmans anymore because my hip just won't allow for it. So, I gotta be good with that. And, but like you kind of said, you know, pick and choose your battles. So maybe I'll go battle a little bit more on Strava segments in cycling.
You know, that makes me think of, I do a lot of cyclocross racing, and I'm always amazed by the 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds who show up to do cyclocross, which is not, you know, you're getting on and off your bike, you're running with your bike. It is not an easy transition kind of sport. And I'm amazed by those athletes. I think that there's a couple of guys named Dominic in our series in Wisconsin who are always doing really well. And, you know, they're never winning against the 50 plus, but they are amazing athletes. Do you have examples in your own life of older athletes who are doing some pretty incredible things?
Yeah, I used to coach he came to me, I think he was 67, cross-country skier and mountain biker. And it was incredible. So we did what I said. We started strength training. He had not done lots of strength training. So I made his program. There was balance. There was feet speed, like just moving your feet quickly, balance, some like small hops, and then building up his strength. But one thing I had to get him to do was to go slower. When he was doing his aerobic sessions, he had to go slower because he would just pick a back, and then he would just, you know, stick to the back as a glue, and he would, you know, end up going way too fast. So I had to make sure that he goes slow enough on the slow days. And then he took off, I think it was like almost 30 minutes on his 30K ski race time, which is huge. Hmm. As he aged, so he got faster. But yeah, it was just beautiful to watch. He was
awesome.
I was trying not to, like, I was telling him, like, don't compare yourself to others, but he would always take pride of kicking butt, the younger guys, but he was very happy about that.
Along these lines, Paul, I reflect on a conversation that I had with Baz van Hooren, who is a sports scientist in the Netherlands, and he's like he's a 10K champion of the Netherlands himself. And the study that he did was he made contact with the two world record holders in the 70 plus category. And one was, I think, 72, 73, one was 75. Can't remember which one did which, but one was the marathon champion and one was the mile champion. And these guys are doing, like the marathon 70 plus guy was doing like, I think it was like a 2:48. So, I mean, just imagine that, a 2:48 marathon, right? And the miler was like insane as well. But the thing that was really interesting in the running context, I reflect on my own sort of situation, was that these guys started late. So, which really, for the running context, if you're starting late, it's one message is it's never too late, because these guys started like when they were in their 30s. They just really didn't find their love for running until they were in their 30s. But then at the same time, they didn't have my problem where, you know, joints were kind of worn out in their, you know, their earlier kind of years, if 50s are earlier years. But it's like they, you know, they're still sort of setting those records because their chassis was still sort of intact ultimately, which is kind of interesting. And so it's never too late. The other thing that was key for them was, you know, Athletica principles, training consistency. So they, you know, they started late, and then training consistency led them through. So you'll still continue to make adaptations as you age. So you can still continue to get faster. So you would think, right, with these guys starting in 30, well, then they would, you know, if they hit 50 like me, then they should just go downhill from them. But that wasn't the case. They drew a new line, and they kept going faster and faster right up until their 70s, until they were hitting the world record. So kind of goes against a few of the things that we've said, and it's kind of inspiring and gives hope to any of the listeners there that are aging. And then back to where we started with Cindy too. So Cindy, just keep going. Who knows?
I've never met Cindy, but I get the sense that that is exactly what she will be doing, you know, given her attitude towards training. It's awesome.
I think so.
So here are some things that I've learned this week about aging athletes, and being one of them, it's interesting to learn more about how things work. One, like Cindy said, age is just a number. It's never too late to start. And regardless of your age, you can still accomplish great things and hard things. Number two, training consistency and good nutrition are keys. We got to have them to support our training. And number three, maybe what I got out of this the most was that strength training is one of the keys, that we have to lift heavy to recruit large, fast twitch muscle fibers. We need to do balance work. We need to develop our bone and our muscle mass through strength training. Yeah, that's all for this week. Thanks for listening, and join us next week for the Athlete's Compass, when we are going to talk about nutrition. It's going to be awesome. You can help us by asking your questions about nutrition, about training in the comments below, liking and sharing the podcast, and giving us 5-star reviews, engaging with us as well on our social media. For Mariana Rakai, Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Warlosky, and this has been the Athlete's Compass Podcast. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass Podcast, your guiding light through the complex world of training for your endurance sport. For a deeper dive into the science, listen to our companion podcast, the Training Science Podcast, and check out the AI adaptive training platform, athletica.ai. Thanks.